the Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch.
Dr. Seuss, the master of nonsensical rhyme and verse and the creator of such classics as The Cat in the Hat and Green Eggs and Ham, was born 100 years ago, but he still reigns supreme as one of the most beloved and influential children's authors and illustrators of the 21st century. And he's the subject of a new book, Dr. Seuss, American Icon, by Philip Nell. Nell is a professor of English at Kansas State University. He's also the author of J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter's novels, A Reader's Guide. Welcome, Philip.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Theodore Seuss Geisel, born on March 2, 1904, Springfield, Massachusetts, not far from where I grew up. Take it from there. Tell us what we should know about his childhood.
Well, he was the son of Theodore Robert Geisel, who was a brewer, and of the former Henrietta Seuss, and his real name was Theodore Seuss Geisel. Two important things about his childhood would be that as the son of German immigrants, his grandparents came from Germany, he was teased at the beginning of World War I when German Americans found themselves under fire at home. And also when he went to college, another thing happened which I think is influential in his career, and that is that not a single fraternity invited him to pledge at Dartmouth, where he went to college, because it was thought that he was Jewish. And that led him to join the humor magazine.
He wasn't Jewish.
No, he wasn't.
Okay.
But I think that those incidents are the kind of incidents that will shape a man who grows up to write books that are critical of prejudice. You know, being teased for his ethnicity and for his presumed religion leads him to grow up to write books like The Sneetches and Horton Hears a Who. So those would be two incidents from his childhood, I think, that would be important.
Okay. Now, earlier in the year, there was a lot of literature, articles, propaganda perhaps out of Springfield, Massachusetts, claiming them as his own. Is there anything important about his being raised in Springfield that we should know about him?
Well, sure. The architecture in his books borrows from Springfield's architecture. It also borrows from La Jolla's architecture, which is where he lived most of his adult life. The zoo. He spent time at the zoo drawing the animals, and the animals didn't come out looking exactly like zoo animals, as you might imagine, but that's an important influence in his life from Springfield as well.
Okay. Now, he grows up, he marries twice, but he has no children.
Right.
Yet he becomes probably one of the most famous writers of children's books, certainly of our age, of all time. Do you think there's any influence with the fact that he didn't have any children on his writing?
Well, when reporters asked him that question, he would always say, "You make him, I'll amuse him." But I think that joke may conceal some deeper feelings. His first wife, Helen, couldn't have children, and when friends bragged about their children, he and Helen would talk about their imaginary daughter, Chrysanthemum Pearl, who, you know, was quite a remarkable daughter of theirs, and even would include her on Christmas cards as kind of a joke. But I also think that wasn't entirely just a joke. He dedicates his second book to Chrysanthemum Pearl, aged 89 months, going on 90. So I think his absence of children may have been an influence. I think even more, perhaps, it's that he remembered his childhood into his adulthood and was able to use that. So
Chrysanthemum Pearl, what a great name.
Yeah.
So when did Theodore Seuss Geisel become Dr. Seuss?
Well, during the spring of 1925, when he was a senior at Dartmouth and was editor of the College Humor magazine, he and some of his friends were caught drinking gin in his room, and they were punished because it was Easter weekend and it was during Prohibition, and so he was forbidden to continue to edit or contribute to the College Humor magazine, Jack-O-Lantern. And so he contributed anyway. He just used different names. L. Pasteur, D.G. Rossetti, Class of 25, T. Seuss and Seuss, and that's the first time that he takes Seuss, his mother's maiden name and his middle name, as his pseudonym. And then a couple of years later, as a magazine cartoonist, he adopts the Doctor, first as Dr. Theophrastus Seuss, and then just as Dr. Seuss.
Interesting. You mentioned earlier, this is kind of ironic, he was ridiculed because he was a German around the time of World War I, and people accused him of being Jewish when he wasn't.
Right.
And yet, just prior to World War II and during World War II, he takes on Adolf Hitler and is, let's just say, quite critical of him. Tell us about that.
Yeah. In fact, before the United States entered the war, Seuss was very worried because he knew that we were going to be involved in this war, and he was worried that we weren't prepared because isolationist sentiment at home was leading people astray. And so he began publishing cartoons in the left-wing New York newspaper PM. In fact, he published over 400 of these between April of 1941 and January of 1943. And they were anti-fascist cartoons. They were critical of anti-Semitism. They were critical of racism. They were critical of isolationism. And this is Seuss at his most raw, his most provocative. It's Seuss wearing his politics on his sleeve. It was really an important time for his work because he uses his art to change people's minds. And it's a direct line from there to books like Yertle the Turtle, which he said was inspired by the rise of Hitler. I mean, it's probably the most popular anti-fascist book ever written. Or books like The Sneetches, which was inspired by his opposition to anti-Semitism. So a very important time in his life.
Was he a liberal for most of his life, his political philosophy?
Yeah, he was a liberal Democrat. He voted Democrat.
Okay. You write that he was in many ways the quiet outsider. He often portrayed in his books an underdog who endures ridicule for his eccentricities, but someone who triumphs in the end. Great line. What does it mean?
Well, it means a number of things, but I think the best way to explain that would be to recount a story from his high school art class when he was drawing a picture, and he turned the picture upside down. Because, although he didn't realize it at the time, if the picture looks wrong upside down, it will also look wrong right side up. You can check the balance by turning it upside down. Well, his teacher came over and said, "Theodore, real artists don't turn their pictures upside down." Instinctively, the young Ted Geisel knew that they did, and he got up and walked out of that art class, never to return, and never to really have any formal education as an artist. And of course, he got the last laugh, didn't he? He made his fame, his name, and his money as an artist, first an advertising artist and then as the writer of children's books. So that's one explanation of that line.
Seminal moment in his life.
Yeah, it really was. Or at least he looked back on it that way.
Sure, right. Yeah. Your introduction is titled, How to Read Dr. Seuss. Now, I doubt many people even thought about that, thinking how difficult can it be to read Dr. Seuss. So let's talk about that a bit. Let's start with one of his better-known books, and if we have a chance, we'll do more than one. But let's do The Cat in the Hat to start with.
Well, how should we read Dr. Seuss? We should read him as an artist, a poet, and a provocateur. Most people don't take his poetry seriously because he's writing for children and because the meter in which he writes is the same meter as the limerick. It's anapests is what he uses most of the time. It's actually also the same meter as The Night Before Christmas. So that's one way. Read him as a poet. And it's very hard to write not only poetry, but to write using a limited vocabulary. The Cat in the Hat has only 225 different words because it's designed to teach children to read, and you don't want to include too many words to confuse them. So that's in verse, and it has a limited vocabulary, which I think is really quite remarkable. And if you look at the book, I mean, look at the drafts of it. You can see that he worked very hard to get the verse just right. Well, how about the art? As an artist, Seuss synthesizes 20th century styles into his own style, Seussism. You can see cartoonists like George Harriman's Crazy Cat, Rube Goldberg, but also the influence of surrealism, of Art Nouveau, of Cubism in his work, and mixes that into his own unique, energetic cartoon surrealism, Seussism. So that's another way to read him. And, of course, as a provocateur, to come back to The Cat in the Hat, the book ends like this. It ends with the cat having cleaned everything up. Mom comes home, asks, "What did you do today?" And it ends like this. The children say, should we tell her about it? Now, what should we do? Well, what would you do if your mother asked you? Open question. Do you tell your mother a lie, which she'll believe there was no cat? Or do you tell her the truth, which she won't believe? And I like that. He does that in a lot of his books. He leaves it open, puts the question to the reader. So
great. Very good. What about Green Eggs and Ham?
Well, Green Eggs and Ham is a fun story behind that, too. His publisher, Bennett Cerf, bet him that he couldn't write a book using 50 or fewer words. And Green Eggs and Ham was the result. It has 50 words in it, exactly. And it's his bestseller, too, incidentally. Green Eggs and Ham is the top-selling Seuss book.
Tell us how it's provocative. How's the provocateur come through in it?
Well, the provocateur comes through in that one because you might think, standard kind of lesson. Try something new. Try Green Eggs and Ham. How do you know you won't like it if you haven't tried it? But notice that it's the small character who's delivering that lesson to the large character. The child is lecturing the adult here. In Seuss's books, he often places faith in the child. The child will be the person who is the agent of change, who can challenge the status quo. Adults don't get it. So that's the provocateur side there. He takes the side of the child, and the children Children are the future, really. Children can change things.
Okay, let's switch gears a little bit, because I didn't know this myself, that he wrote an adult book. Tell us about the adult book.
Yes, The Seven Lady Godivas. It was published in 1939, and it was a flop. The premise is that there's not one Lady Godiva, but seven. And each of the Lady Godivas, or Ladies Godiva, is engaged to one of the brothers peeping. There's peeping Tom, peeping Dick, peeping Harry, peeping Sylvester, peeping Frelinghuysen, and so on. Well, anyway, Lord Godiva dies. He's killed in a horse accident, and the sisters Godiva, the ladies Godiva, decide that they will not marry until each of them has discovered a horse truth. And so they learn things like don't put the cart before the horse, and you can lead a horse to water but can't make him drink, kind of the gag cartoon material that he was writing a lot at the time, which sounds fairly innocent, except that all of the ladies Godiva are completely naked. However, imagine Dr. Seuss drawing naked women. These are perhaps the least erotic women ever depicted anywhere.
Well, that explains why it failed. So
yes, yes, it does. Seuss attributed his failure to that. He said, you know, he said, quote, "I attempted to draw the sexiest babes I could, but they came out looking absurd. I think I got their ankles wrong. They're funny, but as an adult book, it doesn't really succeed with the adult content, as it were."
Okay, what about the musical, The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T?
Also a flop, I'm afraid, but a much more interesting flop. In this one, Bart Collins, played by Tommy Rettig, who would play Timmy in the TV show Lassie, hates piano lessons. And Dr. Terwilliger teaches him piano, and he has this nightmare of a kind of piano prison camp where all these boys are enslaved to play Dr. Terwilliger's massive piano. And it's a visually very dark and very Seussian movie in its sets and in its look. But yeah, Seuss more or less disowned that. It came out in, I think, 1953, and it has sort of a cult following now, but he didn't feel it quite lived up to his standards. But I think it's a lot of fun.
Okay, sounds it. Okay, you conclude the book by commenting on Seuss and calling him an American icon and an American iconoclast.
Right. He is an icon of children's literature. He is hailed by members of both parties, Democrats, Republicans, as this great American, teaches children to read funny books. And yet, of course, he's also something of a subversive, something of an iconoclast. He wrote the Butter Battle Book, for example, to challenge Ronald Reagan's escalation of the nuclear arms race. He wrote The Lorax as a pro-environmentalist book critiquing the way people exploit the environment. So he's taken as this icon, is this figure really embraced by all Americans, and yet he actually has an edge to him. So that's why I say icon and iconoclast, and I also think that's a uniquely American kind of characteristic, that we celebrate the rebel, the iconoclast, and yet, of course, we live by laws and we're not in a constant state of revolt, and he embodies that kind of paradox of the American character and being icon and iconoclastic at the same time.
Okay, well, that's where we'll end it, but you must be very pleased, and this book's gotten a lot of play, and it's certainly well written, so congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you very much, and thanks so much for having me on the program.
You're welcome. I've been talking with Philip Nell, author of Dr. Seuss, American Icon, published this year by Continuum Publishing.
Rot, 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 rot. It's a plot, 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 plot. We're the Wickersham Brothers. We're on to your plot. Pretending you're talking to who's who are not. It's a deep, tight, evil, political plot. Pretending you're talking to who's who are not. We're the Wickersham Brothers. We're vigilant spotters. Hot shot spotters of rotters and plotters.